Yo. Hey. Can you hear me?
You listening to #WAW. What a week.
Welcome back to another edition of Wow, What a Week. It's the beginning of May, and it's somewhat of a strange time. I mean, it's a little warm, a bit of rain here and there. You know, the cold might arrive, but it's not here right now in any major way, and it's still sort of bright. So while we have the light in all senses, let's get into another edition of Wow, What a Week.
This is
Wow! What a week.
What a week. This kid really kicks.
Our comedian guest is in the building. But first, we'd like to assure everyone regarding something. Everything smells fine, okay? Yes, there might be some dust in the air, but everything smells fine, including him. Everyone stay calm. Having said that, and if there are no protests or objections, please join me in giving a warm welcome to comedian Q Dube.
How are you, sir?
What's up, Q?
No, I'm good. I'm good. The intro, man. I don't think I'm going to ever live that down, but yeah.
For those that don't know what we're talking about, what are we talking about?
Fresh. I messed up. I messed up last year. I was on a podcast that we're on called Sensitish.
Okay.
And I told a joke that I had... I'm originally from Zim.
Okay.
So I told a joke that me and my Zimbabwean friends had said.
Okay.
And I said it on this platform, and the clip went to Zim, and it wasn't received well.
Okay.
And the joke was, my biggest fear is people saying I smell like a Zimbabwean.
Oh, wow.
So it was bad. It was bad.
So I hope you're not taking offense that you walked into studio,
right?
And we've set up a diffuser.
I was like, okay, I see it. I was like, no, I see it. And the diffuser's by me. It's by me. I was like, no, it's fine.
No. Just for the record, We are working on a wow scent.
Okay.
So the diffuser will be here every episode,
right?
So that people can get used to the wow scent.
Got you.
Because wow will be a scent that you can take home, you can have in your car, you can have it as a body oil.
Okay.
Elsa, if you're listening, Elsa Majimbo, you're always oiling yourself. There'll be a wow scent for you soon. So what do you think of the wow scent?
It's lovely. I love it. Yeah. It smells very good.
Okay, so you're not offended that we had
Not at all. Not at all.
So you had armpit gate, as it were.
Right.
Causing heat for you.
Yeah.
Is it safe to go home now?
Zimbabweans are not a violent people. It is safe, but I do understand why. I do understand that I messed up. I do understand, because a lot of people say comedians have a comedic license.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that's necessarily true.
It should have a limitation of sorts. Yes.
I insulted
within
people.
Within reason.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That
you,
was
you insulted the whole nation.
The whole nation. And as a joke amongst us as Zimbabweans, because it was my Zim friends who said it.
Sure.
And as a comic, I was like, I'm gonna use that.
Yes.
And then I totally out of context said it in the wrong space. Like the gentleman that you spoke with earlier said, when you're out the country, you represent the country.
Absolutely.
And I did let my country down, and I apologize profusely for that. So hopefully the armpit gate hashtag will drop.
Have you gone back home since?
No. No. We take it easy. No.
Anyway, before we talk about your week, there's quite a bit happening this week. I need to make a phone call. I'm calling someone who is the only artist to ever reduce me to tears while on stage.
Ooh.
And this was from her performance and from no other reason.
Okay.
I didn't like stub my toe or step on a Lego.
Right. I was about to ask, what happened?
Because those are the things that might even have you in tears.
Right.
Stepping on a Lego. I hope my kids are watching this. Answer the phone.
Hi, Tato.
Zonke Dikana.
Wow. Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
We have a guest. His name is Q. He's a comedian from Zim. In fact, weirdly enough, the last time I saw you on stage was in Zim. We did a show together in Zim.
I was performing there at Jacaranda Music Fest.
I'm a huge fan.
For the first time ever, Zonke was my opening act. It'll never happen again.
Okay.
So I want to put that in my CV.
And I saw you standing there as the headliner waiting to hit the stage.
I was standing in front there with the crowd.
Right,
she was on stage.
Oh, man. Jeez, in Pinto is my...
Yeah.
Oh.
I think it's the anthem for a lot of Zimbabweans who left. That yeah. things will change.
Now you are the comedian.
All right, that was good. That was good. On the money. That was on the money.
Zonke, you've got a brand new song with Mdu?
You know, everybody who's heard that song asked me, how did you manage to get Mdu into studio?
Did you get him into studio?
I did.
Tell us more. What is the song? Where do we get it? Because I've only heard it on radio, but I see I can't go and buy it and support you.
This is coming out today on Apple Music first, and then the rest of the streaming platforms. Ask me why. I don't know why it's going to be like that.
And maybe Apple will give you more for streaming than Spotify.
Who knows? I mean, I don't worry about that stuff. I'm the one who decided to do CDs and memory sticks.
Maybe you must stick to the CDs, hey? At least you see the money and where it's going.
No, but for the single, I think it's just a gift, you know, to the people. You know, I was done with the album and I was a little bit bored. I was like, okay, I have a studio, I have ideas, let me just play around. So I texted Mdu. I said, can I please use your song, Hey Cop? Because
yeah.
I've always admired that beat. It's so melodic.
Yes.
And yes. He said, yeah, go ahead. You know, I'm sure it's going to sound better. I said, there's no way. It's just going to sound different because I'm a vocalist.
Yes.
I'm a singer. So the reason why I want to use it, because it already sounds perfect. You know, nope. And he said, okay, no, go ahead. So I played around with it, wrote something on it. I sang and I sent it to him. And he loved it so much. And I said, by the way, I left the second verse empty. Can you jump on your own song as a feature?
Yeah.
And he said, oh, wow, yeah, why not? And he was, you know, at my house in the studio the very same day. You know, so that's how the whole thing happened.
You know, I have goosebumps even on my legs just listening to you relate the story. One, because I'm a fan, but also because it's an epic story. And you know, you speak about how Hey Cop was melodic, even at a time where Kwaito was not known for melodies.
Yes.
And I think
Mdu, that's why this song stuck with me for so long.
Yes. Mdu to Kwaito to those levels, just like Tukulo lyrically did the same for Kwaito.
Exactly. Exactly. That's an amazing comparison, if I may call it that.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, that's an amazing comparison. That's exactly what they did in their respective corners.
I'm very excited, you know, for this release. But I also know that you're performing at Somizi's Jubilee this weekend. Tell us
what this weekend. Yes.
What can we expect there?
Well, I always travel with my big band, huge band. There's going to be so many of us on stage as usual.
Yeah.
But people can expect, you know, I have a lot of songs. So I try to take a little bit of this and a little bit of that from all albums. But people can definitely expect more songs from the latest album, Embo.
That is so dope.
Yeah. It's going to be amazing. I love being on stage. And, you know, Somizi always gives out this amazing energy. You can't come there and just have dead energy there.
Absolutely. listen, we're looking forward to the brand new single with you and Mdu. And I just love you, dude. I could talk to you the whole day. I could listen to your music the whole day. Oh, yeah, I do that already. Okay, so since I can't talk to you the whole day.
Thank you so much. This is my first interview regarding this single, by the way.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Thank you, Zonke. We love you and all the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Fresh.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Wow. Yeah. So which artist do you have on speed dial? Hey. Do you have Trevor Noah on speed dial, Pella? We have to think comedy now.
Yeah, I know. The closest I have to Trevor Noah is Robbie Collins. Like, that's the closest I have.
One of your first ever performances, though, you shared a stage with Trevor Noah, right?
Yes, yes. It's the very first one I shared. It was at the Blues Room.
I know.
Be at the Blues Room, and I had gone there with my uncle Lutuli,
yes,
at Dlamini, and I kept bothering him. I was like, hey, man, I think I can do that. And he took me backstage, and he says, hey, guys, this guy says he can do what you do.
Just like that?
Just like that. And I was like, that's the worst intro ever. It's like taking your boy to a girl and says, yeah, Uti.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, wait a minute. Whoa, that's not it. So I got 3 minutes right before Trevor. He was like, all right, give him 3 minutes before me.
Oh, wow.
And I got on, got laughs for the first two jokes. Then again, put my foot in my mouth and got booed off stage.
Okay, so how did you put your foot in the mouth?
Like, it was literally 2 weeks before the World Cup had kicked off. It was 2010.
Okay.
And so I get on and I say, you know, after my two laughs, and now, you know, the confidence now kicks in.
Yes, the balls grow.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm like, yo, man, you know, in 2 weeks' time, the World Cup kicks off. Yeah. Everyone goes, woo. And I say, yeah, but you know you're not going to make it past the first round, right? And so everyone was like, ah, you see now. You see now. And then booed me off stage. And that was that. But I was like, I'm coming back.
I was going to say, but you stuck to your guns. Why did you stick to your comedic guns?
I think because I understood where the mess up was.
Sure.
Yeah, so I got the two laughs.
Don't insult people in that country.
Exactly.
That's why you decided to insult your people in your country. And that didn't work out either.
Hey, so, it's like...
So basically, you don't learn.
Yeah, no, my learning for the education system that we have in Zim. I'm not learning lessons, but no, we're getting there.
How's the comedy scene in Zim? And the reason I'm asking you is generally African governments don't take too kindly to the direction comedy may take.
Right.
Yeah, what's the situation in Zim?
Comedy in Zim, you know what the issue is with governments?
Yeah.
The issue is not necessarily the government itself.
Sure.
It's gatekeepers. Ah. So you will find that things will happen.
So it's the ice boy.
It's the ice boy.
He's going to run and say, master.
Yes. So by the time it gets to the people in office, they don't know that happened. Or if it has happened already, to backtrack from that is a thing they are not going to do. It's like, guys, why did you do that? And it becomes that type of a conversation. So it's not necessarily that they are commissioned to say, go and bother comedians.
Sure.
I think for a government to take you serious, it's when you now have the power to gather people.
To disrupt things.
Yes. Once you now have that, then they start paying attention. Cracking jokes, ministers don't care about that. You know, we have a comedian called Carl Joshua Ngube.
Yeah.
He performed at the late former president's daughter's wedding.
Okay.
And he cracked all the jokes that he cracks in the clubs. And when the president stepped on stage, he acknowledged him. He was like, oh, you're a crafty comedian. So they laughed at everything. Mm. So it's usually the gatekeepers.
Try it at the Civic Center and see what happens.
What's I mean, you know, there are lines that you don't cross as well. You know, you should know where to dance and the like. But yeah, the comedy scene is there. People are free to say what they want to say. Mm. And as long as you don't directly insult anyone, you know, you're good for the most part.
Sure.
Yeah.
You once said that doing comedy allowed you to overcome the torrents of life. And it prevented you from being swept into the whirlwind of the past.
Right.
In simple English, what the hell do you mean?
Comedy, for me, saved my life.
Sure.
Yeah, it saved my life in a space where I couldn't figure anything out.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I couldn't get what was going on. I'm not book smart. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a creative. Put anything.
Oh, but you respect Smus.
Yeah.
So are those just because you're blind? I thought because you're smart.
No. Like Tsitsi says, it's to see unemployment face to face. So that's why I have glasses. It's so that I see that, yeah, my life here. Yeah. But other than that, yeah, man, it really saved my life. And I give it all the credit. Mm. You know what I mean? At a time where I wasn't getting along that well with my dad and so on and so forth.
Mm.
Him seeing me do this.
Sure.
Ignited a certain pride. Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Oh, so he is not useless.
No. You see what I'm saying? He's like, wow, there's something. You know, that's why I'm scared to be a parent also. Because when I also look at what my dad had to go through with me and understanding him, I'm like, will I have that patience to say, hey, what is this boy?
Sure.
Where is he going? Like, what is he going to become? Mm. You know, and that anxiety for him as a parent. But I've traveled the world doing this. You know what I mean? Sure. Just not Africa, but, you know.
The rest of the world.
The rest of the world. Mm. Cracking jokes from something I think about and write on a piece of paper.
But you also endured bullying, though.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Severe bullying. I was tall, lanky. called Steve Urkel.
You haven't changed.
I haven't. I thought the drive-throughs I've been going through here, you know, have been helping a bit, but I was way worse than this.
Sure.
And yeah, I got bullied, man.
So you were the geeky kid, basically.
I was the geeky kid. But the thing that annoys me about the way I could understand the bullying where I was bullied by people older.
Sure.
That's fine. I went to a certain high school called Plumtree High School.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because I had failed my what is O level, so I had gone to repeat. And my dad shipped me.
Oh, it's like you are repeating out of town.
Yeah,
like, where they don't know you.
Right, go to a boarding school.
Yeah.
I was being bullied by a person my age.
Sure.
That is a different type of hurt. He's called Justin Lautret. I'll never forget that dude.
Where is Justin Lautret right now?
I'm looking for him because he needs to, so that we can compare passports.
He must account.
To say, right, look at my passport. I want to see yours. I've traveled now. Yeah. I'm doing this. But that hurt. And bullying, I think sometimes we think it's a thing to toughen up kids.
Sure.
Teasing, yes.
Often it breaks you down to almost nothing.
Nothing. And especially if it's physical.
Sure.
And the anxiety of a door opening and you don't know who's coming through that door. And if it's him, it's like, okay, I need to brace myself. Here we go again. It's not a nice feeling.
How do you as an adult reconcile your childhood traumas such that it doesn't become a debilitating recollection?
So, funny enough, that's a very interesting question because I then grew a very, very bad temper.
Okay.
Especially when I then learned how to fight. And now I felt that
So you learned the martial arts.
Oh, yeah. I learned how to fight. And it got... The toxicity is I started enjoying it.
Oh, yes.
So I would enjoy fighting, right? Because now it felt like I had to prove that I'm not... that guy. But I'm proving it in bars. I'm proving it road rage.
The guys that you should be giving a bloody nose are not there.
Are not there anymore. Yeah. You know what I mean? So doing that healing...
Justin, we're looking for you.
Justin Lautret. Look, I don't know, because he actually could fight. So I don't know. I don't know. Listen, I don't want to put that out there. I'm not going to say, hey, Justin, I'm looking for you. Mike Tyson now is Mike Tyson 20 years ago. So Justin could actually fight.
Yeah.
But outside of that, you have to do that healing. Another piece of healing, I was actually having this chat as well with someone else. About, you know, what we face as boys at the hands of older women, you know. Also, that men have a lot of healing that we need to do.
Tell us about that. I'm asking you to tell me that because I'll also tell you a story.
Yeah, so by the age of 13, I had seen three women way over the age of 25, fully naked. And you don't realize what that does until you get into your older years.
Okay.
You know, so my love for older women,
So how did you stumble upon naked older women when you were 13?
They would facilitate it. They would facilitate
it. So you only saw them naked, nothing else?
Well, things happened.
Okay.
That's
abuse.
It is
a lot of boys go through it. That's what I'm saying. Tell us that story, because I know a lot of boys that went through that from as early as primary school.
Right.
Where the older girls would either touch you
right,
or your older girl cousin who was in puberty would make you do stuff or make you dry hump or even make you hump.
Yeah.
A lot of boys go through that.
Yeah.
And it's only later maybe when you realize how it affects how you relate to women.
Exactly.
That you realize that that's what that did.
That's what that was. And that's the cycle. For me, the first one was our helper.
Yeah,
she was our helper, and she would make me touch her. She would make me do things, and
so you touched Mavis.
Yeah,
auntie. Oh wow.
Wait, why?
Oh wow,
Mavis.
Oh wow.
So yeah, that's what that was.
That's why she was taking sugar. She knew.
She knew that. Aye, man.
She's our child.
House Mavis, wherever you are.
So how old were you at the time?
How old was I when Zelamene was at home?
No, let's call her Mavis.
Well, we call her Mavis. Yeah. Ah, well, I mean, you know, I don't mind calling her out for what she did. I was, I think, 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about 9 or 10. And like you say, at the time, you don't know what it is. You get around other boys who are a bit older. They are talking about these things. In your mind, you're like,
Or in your undeveloped, immature mind, you might enjoy the sensation.
Yes.
But you don't realize exactly what it is that is happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that used to happen with an older cousin of mine who used to always force us to play house. You know what I mean? And would always, you know, force some of the boys to either get naked or to dry hump or to hump.
Right.
And it's, you realize much later that no.
That wasn't it.
That should not have happened.
Yeah. That wasn't it. That shouldn't have happened. I remember, I don't know if this will be too much info, but there's a certain scent, a certain smell that's down there.
Sure.
And I remember in my older years that I was with someone, which now was a thing.
So you know, it triggered you.
It triggered and I threw up.
Oh, wow.
And the thing is, I knew where I knew that
scent from.
Scent from. And that's when you start saying, okay, wait, let me take a step back.
Sure.
And let me start, you know, unpacking certain things and getting to where you are today.
Yeah. Have you gotten help for any of this, or do you feel you've healed and moved on?
That's the thing about these things. Do you ever heal? I don't know. Like, do you know, I think you try your best to be a member of society and, you know, not repeat the cycle with other people. And do you know what I mean? So, yeah, in terms of the journey of that healing, I think it's a journey that will happen for as long as, you know.
We need to make another phone call. So we called Zonke earlier on.
Yeah.
We need to make another phone call with one of my favorite DJs and producers on the planet.
Oh, okay. That was such a transition.
Yeah. I'm trying to move you from Mavis to music.
I was like, oh, okay, that is, let's go.
From Mavis to music.
To music, let's do it.
Hopefully this music will touch you better than Mavis did. I don't know why you're laughing. It's not funny.
Oh, no, you're going to get canceled. Like, I'm just chilling. Like, I'm good.
Temba. Where's Temba gone? Yo, Temba, how you doing, my dude? Temba.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. Where in the world are you today, my dude?
Düsseldorf at the moment.
Düsseldorf is in Germany, right?
Yeah, it's in Germany.
Okay, so we are calling to have a word with you about your collaboration with David Guetta. One, because I'm proud of you and you're my dude. But secondly, because I don't think we're making enough noise about this. For me, it's a big deal.
Oh, it is.
How on earth do you collaborate with David Guetta? Like, how did this conversation even start?
So I think he just hit me up in the DMs. And he was like, listen, I've got this record that's out. And I'd like a remix for it. Can you check it out? And if it's your vibe, look at it. And I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to work on it. So I worked on it. And then I was finished with it. And he was very happy with it. And then he was like, you know what? Like, I actually want to release this as an original track with my Jetpack alias.
Yes.
And yeah.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, man. And it's actually doing very, very well.
The thing is, I
think in context, it's not a song that really work for South Africa or for South Africans. And I think that's where the lack of noise is as far as that's concerned. But it's for the global scene. It's doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, in fact, it's doing well. Probably 10 of those streams are mine, just when you get your stats. And the downloads on Beatport, one of them is also mine. Just so that we can...
thank you so much.
So we can contextualize. Note, I didn't say to you, my man, Scafe Link there. Right. You know DJs. DJs always say, do you guys as comedians ever do that? It's like, my man, I need a joke for tonight.
Oh, yeah.
You're lying.
Comics do that. Yeah.
You're lying.
Yeah, they won't say it out loud, but yeah, comics will do that and use each other's jokes and whatever. It does happen. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Temba, we're hanging out with Q. Q is a comedian, so... We're just hanging out.
Yo, what's up, Q?
How are you, sir? Hope you're well. I'm a huge fan. I like how he said that, like, you know me. We're hanging out with Q. And I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I feel important. I'm here.
Temba, you've had an incredible past 3-4 years as Temba.
Yeah.
When you take stock, what are you learning from Temba that Euphonic could use?
Actually, I'm unlearning a lot from Euphonic.
Yeah.
And reapplying it to how I move the Temba brand forward.
What?
And I think when you work in South Africa, which is one country out of 196, at some point you realize, wait a minute, there's 195 other countries that I haven't tapped into.
Yes, yeah.
And in order for me to tap into those countries, what do I need to do? And the thing is, like, when you are at what Euphonic level is in South Africa, it's very difficult for you to bring yourself down to rebuild and start from scratch because you're so used to, like, walking into a door and everyone's happy to see you.
Absolutely.
So it's been, like, one of those things where, like, I literally started from scratch. I learned a lot of things, redid a lot of things that I've done before in a very different way. And just from being Euphonic, you know how to operate when you're working through certain doors.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's been a lot of unlearning and applying what I've learned.
So of the 195 countries, how many are left for you to do? Because you've done pretty much all of Europe and Americas.
Man, I actually taken count of that, but I literally have been everywhere. I think the only places where I haven't touched are Antarctica, China as Temba, and Russia as Temba.
When are you doing Japan? I'm going to actually fly in and catch a Japan gig.
Actually looking for the right places to do. I started infiltrating Asia last year. So it's in my plans to grow bigger and better in those areas.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Before we let you go, the other day we were unveiling your dad's tombstone.
Yeah.
Looking at your dad's legacy, how has that inspired yours? Because I know you're big on legacy, you're big on culture, you know, you're big on Nkosi.
Yeah, for me, culture and my surname and my bloodline is things first.
Yeah.
Everything else comes after, you know. Sure. And I think even when you're done touring the world, what does that look like? Mm. And what have you left behind? And who have you left behind?
Absolutely.
So that's my highest priority over and above everything else that I'm doing in the world, you know. So, yeah, I think my dad would be very proud of me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Plant every day if you can.
If you can. can I ask him one?
Yeah, Q, carry on.
Off the question that you had asked, yeah. Now he's in a position, sir, where you're getting DMs from David and the like. What does Temba thank Euphonic for?
Temba thanks Euphonic for always being Euphonic and being unwavering Euphonic and like not allowing anyone to push you around and literally sticking to your guns and doing the thing that you always thought right. Because the reality is that like the rest of the world isn't looking for another David Guetta. They're looking for Temba.
Yes.
You know? And I think what Euphonic did wrong was that Euphonic was trying to be the David Guetta light of South Africa or the Calvin Harris light of South Africa. It's like Temba's the Temba of the world, and that's that.
Got you.
And I can attest to Euphonic's resilience and hard-headedness and stubbornness because there was a day I wanted to call him out on something, and he's like, my man, I didn't listen to my father, so I'm not going to listen to you.
Oh, that's some self-awareness for you right there.
Like, my man, my father tried
this thing.
So don't think you're going to win here.
Imagine saying that to
but
a
I
judge.
I hear you.
No, he was like, with all due respect, I hear you.
But
right. No.
Oh, that's funny.
Temba, my dude, proud of you. I love you. And the higher you fly, the prouder I become. So please keep kicking ass, my dude.
Thanks, man. And I'll see you at High this year, yeah?
We'll see you at High on the 1st of June. And then I'm coming back for your weekend at High. Can't wait.
Let's go, Leo.
Yes, sir. Brand new single, Jack Back and Temba. Give Me Something to Hold. It's available on all streaming platforms. The fact that David Guetta can send a DM and say, hey, Temba, I'm fine.
Yo.
Hey, I'm fine.
Yes, I'm still getting DMs from Marabastat. We've got a gig we're starting here. I'm like, yo, can I get...
After this podcast, even Auntie is going to be on some, hello, handsome.
She's going to be back.
Maybe she's back.
Like, hey, leave me alone. But you see what comedy does, man. It takes you through that, and you laugh through some of these things.
You know, I was bullied a lot as a kid.
Right.
Like you, but mainly by the older kids.
Yeah.
Because don't you dare if you were my age.
Right.
Because I would have squashed you. But anyway, it's a story for another day. But we're all bullied.
Yeah.
Including our age mates. Mm-hmm. But what being bullied taught me was to be okay with laughing at myself.
Right.
So, for instance, if you called me a name that I thought was funny, I'd also laugh.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And that gave me the armor to be able to deal with even more bullying.
Yes.
That there's nothing right now that anyone can throw at me.
Right.
That'll have me flinch, hurt, feel anxiety, or feel some sort of way.
Right.
There's nothing you can throw at me right now.
Yeah. And that was the thing. Like, so I learned how to jab back verbally.
Yes.
My issue was when it then moved physically.
Sure.
That's where I was now like, yes, I can't handle this. Sure. I don't know how to handle this. But it does teach you those things.
Yes.
You know, and I wish for kids, you know, yeah, it's fine as long as it's not a debilitating thing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? The banter, yes, learn how to banter, learn how to jab back, and you know, if it's in good fun, sure. But when it now becomes a thing where you don't want to go to school,
yes,
because you don't want to meet
when quality of life changes.
Oh, that's it. That's the thing.
That's the word you're
that's
looking
the
for.
Word I'm looking
and
for.
You went to a very good school.
Yeah, oh yeah, I did.
I'm very, very surprised that you didn't find the vocab
for that with my Zimbabwean English.
Where do we find a Q in action? Like, what are you working on currently? What are you up to this week, next week?
So next tomorrow, fly out to GQ and then go off to Zambia. Then
where's GQ?
Qeberha.
Ah, okay.
Yes, then go off to Zambia, Lusaka. I'm with Loy Kola, Mojack Lihoko over there. And then go off to Tanzania, then from Tanzania, Kenya, then I'm back. But what I did shoot was a special for Showmax.
Yes.
So that's coming out. It's my first one, 30 minute. It, you know, super proud of it. Got a standing OV for it. So, you know, I can't wait for people to see it. It was with the Laugh Africa thing that just did the roast of Mini Lamini.
Oh, yes, yeah, I remember. Yes.
So
yes,
I had my special there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the big stories this week was the M1 bridge on the highway almost catching fire.
Fire, yeah.
And what we're being told is that it might be cable thieves that started that fire.
Right.
And then the tunnels underneath were on fire, basically.
Right.
They're trying to put out this fire. And, you know, we always hear the story about cable thieves. Mm-hmm. But nobody ever says, we're going to stop this line that allows for you to dig up a city, cause a fire, almost damage infrastructure, and still be able to go sell it to someone.
Yeah. So the thing is, you know, when we are left to argue and fight, I always tell, never underestimate the intelligence of a country.
Yes.
Never underestimate the things they don't tell you.
Sure.
You know, so when you look at these things, you should be able to reverse the thing.
Follow the money trail.
How do these people get access to that? It's do you know where to go dig for? You don't know that.
I don't know where to dig. Two, even if I had like a ton of copper, I wouldn't know where to sell
it. Where to sell it.
But also, if I sold it, I expect them to ask me, where did you get the copper from?
Right.
I'd expect them to take my details.
Right.
That this is my copper supplier.
Right.
So that if ever there's an issue, I can say, Q sold me the copper.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like nobody cares to follow the money trail.
Yeah.
No one cares to say to scrap yards, we need an inventory of every single person you buy copper from.
Yeah.
And whomever else these scrap yards are selling to.
Yeah.
Why is there no trail?
Why is there no thing? The principles remain the same, Fresh. I didn't come here and knock on the door and say, can I have an interview?
Sure.
I had to talk to your producer talked to you. There was a process.
Yes.
It's the same thing. When you get there, you don't just pitch up with copper. They ask you, Tunyongba.
Exactly.
And then you say your name.
Sure.
And then it's, okay, no, come in. And sure. then the exchange happens. And then you leave. And then they confirm that, no, he copy figi lena.
Sure.
And do you get what why we are so... There's a reason why we focus on the thieves.
The foot soldiers.
Yeah, and we don't go back to... There's a very, very distinct reason. If people understand what we're saying, then they understand.
If they don't understand what we're saying, then...
Another bridge you catch.
Or if we're not on stage this next weekend...
Then you know why. Then you know.
Then follow the trails.
Find out where did I go when I left here. Where did he go? Please follow the trail. Please, you know.
Who do you think is the funniest comedian lately, like the last month for you?
In South Africa or internationally?
Period.
Just period. I would say. I have to give it up to my dog, man. Sfiso Nene.
Yeah.
Oh, that man is funny, man.
Yeah. He's a genius.
Oh, Sfiso. Yeah. And I, for the life of me, I can't figure out how he does it.
Sure.
I can't. Like other comics, they're smart. You get how they are getting to. Yeah. Oh, I see the technique. I can't figure Sfiso out.
So there's no trail there.
There's no trail. There's no trail. Sfiso will say the simplest thing on stage,
sure.
but in the funniest way. And
do you have any recollection of any Sfiso gags that had you gagging, as it were?
There's funny enough, when you mentioned Mavis, why I laughed, where he says, in the black community, it takes a village to raise a child.
Sure.
In the white community, it takes Mavis.
Yeah.
I'm like, Sfiso, how do you... It takes you a second to say, Emmanuel. Oh, man. He's extremely, extremely hilarious. He's got a joke that has a callback where he's talking about an argument with his girl.
Sure.
And she's talking about COVID, who was there for you? No one was there for you except for me.
Sure.
He does it once. And then he goes on, says something else. Then when he starts again to say, during COVID, who the crowd is now saying.
They've already caught on.
They've caught. How do you do that?
Yeah.
How? Oh, man, I'm a fan. But I'm a fan of anyone who steps on stage.
Really. Sure.
Yeah, because I think it's not easy.
So since Armpit Gate, would you say you're more careful about what you talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Or is everything else fair game?
So
now you know not to talk about armpits, but everything else is fair game.
No. I'm still very, I'm cognizant because we're meant to entertain people, right? And we, like I was saying, we don't have the license to insult. We don't have the license to make people uncomfortable.
Some comedians became multimillionaires being offensive.
But we're not there anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now these 2000s, they don't play, Baba. They will tell you.
Not sensitive.
Yeah. They will. But sometimes within reason, because like with that context, I got it, and I was like, okay, I see. I see what I did wrong. I see where I got it wrong. So you know, but Jordan Peterson also said, in order for you to think, you have to risk being offensive.
Sure.
So that's the line that you toe. If you do have things you want to address, it's not what you say, it's how you say it, how you present it, for it to spark conversation. You know, so I have to be cognizant of that.
What's your most popular gag that people upset if you leave the stage without talking about it?
Ooh.
Do you have one?
I don't know. Maybe they would tell me.
Yeah.
There's one where my usual opener for new crowds when I'm here is I'm all the way from Zimbabwe. Do you know what that means? I ask an audience member and then usually they don't know. And I'm like, no, I'm a Zimbabwean in South Africa. You don't know what that means? And they're like, no. And I'm like, no, it means one thing and one thing only. I'm not going back. You know? And everyone's like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not going back. You can tell Nhlanhla Laks I said, Dunganya. I am not going. I am here. I've got my Uber already. I am here. I'll take you home from here. Request, I'll accept. I'll take you home. But it's not to talk down on Zim. It's to address xenophobia.
Sure.
So as a Zimbabwean on stage, saying it, and then let me entertain you. So once I've said that, usually at the end of the set, I then ask the crowd, can I stay?
Okay. And then, yeah, you can stay. But it's to address...
Oh, so it's foreplay, basically.
You see now.
And in the event that you feel that, I did the thing.
Right.
Then you ask her, then so...
Can I? And then, come back again.
Come back.
Yes, come again.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this is back. Auntie!
Auntie, in the crowd. All right, that's all. You're on the money. I love it.
Before we let you go, have you had any xenophobia scares where you felt it?
Or
it was hurtful, or you felt the hate, or you even felt unsafe for that matter?
Unsafe, no. Okay. Unsafe, I would be lying, no. But I've been a part of a couple of uncomfortable conversations.
Okay.
Where it felt like, I think one question that I asked a certain group that I was sitting with, and they were very passionate.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, are you saying that if illegal immigrants got legit papers, they are welcome to stay?
Yeah.
And there was a certain pause.
Sure.
And then the onlash came.
Yeah.
And it's understandable in terms of people's pride for their country, what they want for themselves. And I hear the arguments. All I ask is just for people not to be killed.
Mm.
That's really all I ask. And whatever else needs to be sorted can be sorted in certain offices that we don't have access to.
Sure, they
can have those conversations and sort that out. In terms of hurting people is what I ask. Utai, let's not kill each other.
Sure.
Yeah. Send us to Baitbridge. You know what I mean? We'll cross back into Zim and we'll come back though. We'll swim back and then, we can do that. You know, it's employment. You hire people to take us over. We come back. You know, everyone is getting paid as we go along and yeah. You know what I mean? You know, yeah.
And there's a crocodile in the river. It's like, motherfuckers are crazy. They're back in the river.
They're back in the river again, yeah. If we're crossing via the river, I'll look for us Mavis.
Yeah.
And leave her there for the girls to get her.
My dude, where do we find you online if we want to interact with you, support you?
It's just Q Dube. It's just Q Dube. I didn't want to remix a lot of things. So it's just Q Dube on all platforms. I'm found. I host TikTok lives on TikTok, which are very impactful, actually. The 16-year-old girl, remember, I don't know if you remember that story with the iPhone.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
With the sugar daddy. Pasta or whatever.
Yeah, it went onto Twitter from my live.
Oh, wow.
We were talking about it there, and I think an hour into the conversation, she said, I'm the girl, can you bring me up onto the panel?
Oh, wow.
And so she came up, and I had questions with her. I dropped the ball.
How did the conversation with her go?
I asked her, how old are you?
Yeah.
And she said, I'm 18. And I said, so...
But she was 16 when she met the pastor.
When they started dating the pastor. Yeah. Okay. So I said, and who bought you this phone? And she said, it's my boyfriend. And I said, how old is he? And he said, he's 22. And I said, are you sure? And she said, yes, I am. And I said, if it's anything outside of this, it's illegal. Mm. She said, no, I'm telling you, he's 22, I'm 18. Mm. And we met when I was 16. So I was like, okay. And then I'm thankful for the people that said, nah, bruh. And then they took that, went to Twitter, did the investigations.
No, Twitter CSI.
Yeah.
You know, Twitter CSI will probably tell you who shot JFK.
Oh, yeah.
But just not interested.
Right.
But if they wanted they would let you know who was on the grassy knoll.
Right.
Like, who fired that other shot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They would. So that's where it came from. So it's that platform. We talk about healing conversations and things of that nature, which is such a twist, because then when people come see me live on stage, they're like, it's such a distinct difference. But, that's where people can catch me.
So what inspired your TikTok lives?
So my background is actually a bit in radio.
Okay.
Yeah, I did radio, two radio stations in Zim. Mm-hmm. One was actually, the last one I did was Breakfast. I did a Breakfast show and then I got fired for incompetence. And they let me go. So I started doing that format from radio. You know how to engage people.
When you put
up a topic to say, man disappeared for 3 months and he's back without explanation. The way phone lines will go.
Absolutely.
So I just used that to engage engage with
you,
people.
You moved it to another platform, basically.
To another platform, basically. Sure. And then the you realize just how much people have a lot to offload.
Yes,
so the topics kept getting deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And now we are here.
Okay, so we look for Q Dube on Q Dube. TikTok.
Yeah, Q Dube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook.
How often do you do the lives?
Every day.
So every single day, what time?
Every single day, between 8 and 10. I do a live different topic. So now I've changed the format to make it a podcast. One episode out of the week is going to be something we can put up online for people to hear so that I make money for.
Okay, so so tonight between 8 and 10?
Between 8 and 10.
We should be able to catch your lives.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So when are you doing the one with Auntie?
With if I can find her. Okay. Yeah, she has to come and explain, hey, what
no,
happened?
She must account.
Yeah, what happened there? I was 9, man. Yeah. Like, I was 9, 10. Why were we doing that? You know, and so it's to even to the guys that have been through it, acknowledge that it happened and heal.
Do you think it's a blessing or a curse that generally guys are able to laugh about things like that? I'll give you an example. If there's a story about an 18-year-old girl and her male teacher, there'll be outrage, and justifiably so.
Yeah.
But if there's a story about a 16-year-old boy and his female teacher, often it becomes a joke that I wish my teacher would have done that to me too.
Right.
Is it a blessing or a curse that guys are wired like that, that society almost gives the other side of the story a free pass?
Right. It's a curse, but also understanding where the curse comes from. It's a coping mechanism for guys, because we don't have that outlet where we will be taken seriously. And so we are left to our own devices. And in trying to figure this thing out, we then go to jokes, which is meant to ease the thing. It's meant to ease the blow, right? So women will cry. They will sit in the thing and they will cry and they'll talk and they'll be outraged and they'll be... We don't have that. If they walked in now and saw a bunch of us men in here crying, the women won't even look at us the same. It's like, hey, kalala, but we don't know what they're crying about. So because we're not allowed that, it's a coping mechanism. It's not that we're not taking the thing serious. We are trying to deal with it. And this is the way we know how to make you say, hey, man, it's okay. You know what I mean? It's all right. Look, hey, you're laughing. You know what I mean? It's cool. So balancing the laughter with the then taking it, you know, to say, all right, now we've laughed, which is what we've been doing. We've cracked jokes, but we've sat in it as well and had conversation. If we do that with every situation, I think we'll be fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
My dude, you can stay.
Thank you, sir.
Says the other foreigner.
Two foreigners telling each other, I'll stand up for it. But I appreciate you, sir, and you're an inspiration. I know you were talking to the other guys, but I think also you need your flowers as well.
No, thanks.
You're an inspiration to a lot of us.
Thank you,
we chase you, we follow you, and please keep going.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, Q Dube can stay. So he's not about to leave the building.
Right.
It's May, and in SA, that means that we're a few weeks away from elections. So we at WOW suggest you take a tip from the behavior of politics in the coming weeks. Be nice to people, even if you think they're too poor or just peasants, or they can keep their dirty votes. Use a cheaper mode of transport to prove that you are in touch. Visit places you promised to visit a long time ago, but didn't bother with. And if you're a racist, try be a bit more subtle about it, or pretend you never were. I can't be racist. My shoes are black. Hope you all have a WOW week ahead. Coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Shout out Pezulu Works for the cinematography, all of our engineering, the audio that you hear from the show by Otis the Floor Fraser and our guest Q Dube. And shout out to Senti for the new WOW scent, available soon. Creative producer Kuvesh Mohan, show producer Kedizo Modisa King. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Till next week, have an incredibly WOW week in spite of yourselves.